wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Hello and welcome, Davide.
Welcome. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
It is so nice to have you here, taking the place of Joel, who can no longer be with us. So what have you got? What have you got for us?
Well, I've got three stories that basically span a different realm of science. And crabs, coffee, of course, that is a must, an everyday must, and why people like adding rather than subtracting.
Exactly. So I found this really interesting, the one about adding and subtracting. Would you like to tell us a little bit
more about that? That is such a cool story. And it's also like such a simple idea to transform into a piece of science, if you like. So some researchers, let's say at the University of Virginia, started thinking that by looking at actually the behavior of kids, of their own kids even, is that some kids tend to add rather than subtracting in order to solve something or like get around an idea. So they started actually developing and designing all these experiments to actually try to statistically prove if it was true that people tend to add rather than subtract. And the implications of these are huge, in the sense that this applies to, I don't know, writers that seek to strengthen an argument, or even politicians that tend to add to their portfolio instead of taking things away that may not be working, or even designers or even managers that try to actually promote some behavior in their teams. So what they did, something very cool and very simple, and they designed several experiments, and they actually called in some people to actually perform some tasks. And what they did, for example, they asked participants to make changes to a simple digital grid, which was asymmetrical. So on one side of the grid, you had like colored boxes, which are more colored boxes. On the other side, you had like less colored boxes. And they asked you to make it symmetrical by either adding colored boxes on one side or deleting colored boxes on the other side, right? And what they actually found out is that out of the 91 participants, only 20% of them would actually choose subtracting colored boxes rather than adding colored boxes. So 80% was adding to the grid in order to make it symmetrical, even though it was the same amount of effort deleting colored boxes rather than adding them. And they did this over and over again over multiple experiments. For example, in other cases, they gave participants a bridge with two differently sized pillars, and they could either delete blocks from one of the pillars or add blocks to the other pillar. And they saw that the vast majority, over, say, 80% of people, over 90% of people would actually add another block.
That is so interesting. Sorry. That is so interesting, because I think about it and I'd probably add.
I'm the same. I definitely add. Subtracting sounds yuck.
It's so interesting. What else did they do? I see they've used a bit of Lego.
Yes. Basically, this was like the Lego, the brick, adding bricks rather than subtracting bricks to a bridge in order to either increase or decrease a load. So they only saw that the behavior of people would be changing when they actively told people that they could subtract, or if there was an incentive to subtract rather than adding. That's when people started thinking a little bit along the lines of subtracting rather than adding.
Right, but it's just like a go-to add to something.
Yes, you naturally think of adding stuff. And of course, I mean, they have looked into it. We don't have like a definitive answer about this yet. But the reasons are, from cultural to cognitive and even socio-economical in a way. So for example, what they suggested is that additive changes rather than subtractive changes might be mentally easier to process. For example, in the sense that in order to remove elements from a problem, you need to understand them first. What role do they play? It's much easier to add to things without understanding the status quo, let's say.
It is so much easier. I mean, this must have huge implications, you know?
Yes, exactly. And there's also like a story related to the probably like bias that we mentally have in terms of mapping qualitative and quantitative concepts in the sense that, for example, numerical concept like more and higher may be mapped qualitatively with better and, seen more positively, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, even right down to, it's a positive addition as opposed to negative. I mean, even in maths, you're getting negative numbers. It might be as simple as that. We just want positivity.
That is true. I mean, negative numbers are just numbers.
They are.
They are like strangely looked at, but yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's so much harder to kind of wrap your head around a negative number or empty space.
Yes.
As it is to like something that you can see, something that you can hold. An actual number.
Exactly.
Well, they are all actual numbers. And speaking of adding, you're about to add to my day because you've got extracting the best flavor from coffee.
Yeah, no. There was another story that caught my attention. Me being Italian, this is probably cliche, bringing a story about coffee. But yeah, so this story is about some researchers in the UK, physicists. You say even physicists look for the best coffee to make. But this these researchers in the UK, and they are famous for their good coffee in the UK. They built upon a previous experiment that was a little bit surprising in the sense that a previous experimental group showed that when you grind the coffee down to small sizes, even the extraction slows down. And this is very unexpected, right? Because you would think that when you make the coffee grains really small, the actual pressurized water would have more time to interact with your coffee and would have a higher extraction yield, which is one of the, let's say, quality of coffee, even though you don't have to over-extract the coffee. But no, they saw exactly the opposite.
Wow.
So they saw that when you make the coffee grind too small, actually your extraction yield goes downhill. And you don't get a good coffee at the end of the day, right?
No.
So they basically try to understand why this happens. And the optimal, of course, grind size in order to have the best extraction. And they basically designed an experiment, which was a mental experiment in the terms of simulations, right? They designed simulation in which they considered the two coffee beds with the exact same area, with the exact same volume, and then they applied flow of water, pressurized water, hot water, in their model. And they tried to actually match the simulated data to the experimental data that previous researchers had collected and see if their model was working and could explain why with lower grind size you would have lower extraction, right? And they basically, interestingly enough, they discovered that there is a very complex relation between the flow and the extraction, because the flow itself actually changes the property of the ground coffee, of the bed of the coffee that you are trying to extract. So it changes its porosity, and part of the coffee ground is actually washed away, creating small air pockets, which lower extraction if your grind size is too small. So you may end up with an uneven coffee bed.
Yes.
And lower extraction yield in the end.
I didn't know there were so many factors at play. I'm looking at the diagram. It looks nothing like a coffee maker.
Yeah, I know. It's like it's very physics-based, that diagram.
It's not a fine art. It's a fine science.
Yeah.
It is.
It's basically just a line, over X and Y, and this is supposed to tell you if you have a good coffee or not.
So what was the overall consensus? What is the best coffee?
Yeah, so that's very interesting. There is a coffee chart that actually gives you what a good coffee is, and the two properties that make a good coffee is, of course, strength, which scientifically is like the mass extraction of coffee solids, and there is extraction yield, which is how much coffee solid you are actually able to dissolve in your coffee. Mm-hmm. And there is an optimum. And now this optimum cannot be reached if you actually make the grind too fine. Right. And you risk to over-extract as well at some stage, and you risk bitter flavor. So this has got implication also for the taste of your coffee, not only how much of it you get out, and how much of it is, I think, approximately 30-33%. So there is a limit to it. You cannot really go higher because not all coffee is soluble, let's say.
I know, yeah, that is the truth. So size really does matter when it comes to coffee.
Yeah, apparently so.
And then finally, you've got a really interesting one here. And I was looking at a joke the other day on how long the horseshoe crab has survived through multiple mass extinctions. So why are animals continuing to evolve into crabs?
Yes, and that's a very funny story that has got very solid scientific basis, let's say. So let's say that being crab is cool. Apparently, it's evolutionally very cool. Everybody tends to naturally evolve towards a crab. Maybe humans would evolve towards crabs in, like, I don't know.
Everyone wants to be a crab.
Yeah, exactly.
Does look like fun.
And I don't know why. So people have looked into why this is so trendy, evolutionarily speaking. And scientists have collected quite a lot of evidence, let's say, over the years. That at least five different times, different, say, groups of creatures have evolved towards being crab-like. Now, this process is called carcinization, and or crabification, if you want.
Crabification.
Just to actually make up new words for it. And despite being known since a while, it still remains a mystery. We actually don't know. We are speculating, and this, like, new evidence that is coming out has pointed towards, like, specific factors that actually give crabs an evolutionary advantage, edge in having that particular shape. So I don't know if you knew, but there are true crabs and false crabs. Did you know that?
I did know that, right. And I find that so funny.
Yeah, I have learned this very recently, and apparently true crabs are the ones that have four legs on each side, while false crabs, one of the differences, the main difference, is that have only three working legs, and the other one is really not exactly used in full. So they have three working legs rather than four. False crabs.
Gosh.
But anyway, so they have found. So scientists, what they have done, they have found a correlation between the body of a crab, the body form, and the multiple ecological niches. So crabs are actually found almost in every ecological niche on Earth that concerns them, basically, in almost every habitat. And what defines a crab is basically two things. One is the body shape, which is their round body shape, and the other, and which is called the carapace.
Yeah.
And the other one is like the pleon, which is that little tail that folds back on the body, you know, on the bottom of the crab. And sometimes in, like, female crabs, you have like eggs that are nested in there. And that's the other thing. And what really makes crabs evolutionary winners is that this shape is basically optimal in several different scenarios that concerns, like, the protection of the animal, the feeding behavior, and the locomotion. Yes. And funny enough, they have also put forward the idea that the early crabs were not looking like crabs at all. They were looking like shrimps.
Really?
Yeah, so they have evolved from shrimps to being crabs. And so, for example, I will give you just a few examples, not to drag this too long. So they basically have, so having the possibility of having this hard shell that is round give them the ability to reduce the surface area that the predator can attack.
Exactly.
If you think, compared to a lobster, for example, that has got this very long tail, there's like a much lower surface area that predators can attack.
It's like being one big shield.
Exactly.
Being a crab.
Right.
Yeah.
And being hard, which is calcification,
yeah,
also means that you don't have to carry your house with you, because many of the of other species that have not evolved yet in crabs, they have to carry their domicile with them.
They do.
Their shells. So this allows crabs also to adapt to environment where shells do not exist.
Yeah.
Or they are not common, let's say. And last but not least, the ability to move sideways, which is unique to crabs.
That is so cool.
So without having these long tails, they have more space to actually evolve legs that can allow them to move sideways.
They are amazing creatures, eh?
They're very funny. Yeah.
I saw a video of one swimming the other day, and I didn't realize they swam like that. And they're really fast.
Yeah, they are extremely fast. And this is apparently because they have no, like, these long tails like lobsters, and they can move much, much faster sideways.
They're like a big frisbee, kind of, almost.
Pretty much, yeah.
Just amazing. So it pays to be a crab, evolutionary.
It does.
Speaking. Well, thank you so much for those stories, Davide. Thank you, Science. Thank you, Motet. We're going to play a song after this. It is called Spooky by New Order, by the suggestion of Beth, who is on her New Order buzz. Yeah. So here it is.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to Motet, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.